Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Today is Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts, thoughts, questions. Talk to us about the tournament. March Madness is going wild, everybody. It's going crazy. From 64, we're down to the Sweet 16. We've had some great games. We've had some upsets. A couple of Cinderella stories, especially locally. First 4 days of the tournament are gone. Tournament's coming back up tomorrow, starting back up with the Sweet 16 games. Brackets are being busted everywhere. I mean, there's teams flying off the board left and right. St. John's trying to make some noise outside of the tournament. We got some big Met news. It's a March full of sports. We got stuff going everywhere. Baseball, basketball. We got tons of football stuff going on. NHL is getting ready for the playoffs. Let's get it going with some March Madness. Locally, two big upsets in this tournament. Obviously, we're talking about the 16 seed FDU beating the number one seed Purdue. And we're talking about the number 15 seed Princeton taking out the number two seed Arizona. Two local teams getting involved. We had one last year with St. Peter's. We got two more this year, both from New Jersey. Who would have thought? Darren, let's start it up with the NCAA tournament.
I got to tell you, man, it was – what a week. I mean, it was nuts. You know, started with Tuesday, and we did a show that night where we had two great games, right, coming down to the wire. Wednesday didn't have that. And then you sit there and you look, and Princeton beats Arizona, and you're like, that was an eye-opener because Arizona kind of led most of the way, but Princeton hung around. Yeah, Kev.
Well, I thought it was interesting. Second game Thursday, we had our first big upset already.
When no doubt about it.
Two games into the tournament, and we've got
the first game went to overtime. The first game went over to West Virginia, Maryland. So, I mean, it started off and it kicked off amazing. The thing about Furman and Virginia that was so interesting is that Virginia literally, as I was saving for a second, they literally handed the game away. They're basically trying to get fouled, and the kid just throws the ball up the half court. It gets picked off. Guy catches it, makes one pass, and the guy buries the three. Virginia's up two with ball, and all they want to do is foul him. And instead of just getting fouled, he throws the ball aimlessly. And I mean, Virginia literally gave their game away. Princeton actually came back and outplayed Arizona down the stretch. You know, it was nuts. Kev, you about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, especially with the Purdue, the Virginia game, they had a timeout.
There was no reason for any of it.
There's no reason to just chuck the ball up to half court. Call the timeout. Get reset.
There was no reason for any of it. I mean, the tournament, I mean, there was not a time where the games weren't intriguing going on as we were watching them. It was nuts. I mean, you know, again, the Princeton game, you know, we're just like, okay, this is like that last game. Let's just kind of chill out and we'll just watch this one aside. Holy cow, it's getting close. Holy cow, Princeton just pulled ahead. Holy cow, Arizona doesn't have an answer. Arizona with the best, arguably the best five players on the court at any given moment had no answer for Princeton, who just said afterwards, you know what? We're not only going to do that, we're going to blow out Missouri because Missouri will never be in the game again. And you're like, wow, unbelievable. Then you get Tobin Anderson-led FDU, who after Wednesday night's win against Texas Southern starts talking smack about, we'll beat Purdue, right? And, you know, I don't care if they see it or not, we're going to beat them, taking his three best players from Division II, St. Thomas Aquinas.
They're playing Purdue, and they're like, we like the matchup.
And you know what? And not only did they like the matchup, I didn't know what Purdue was trying to do. I mean, listen, don't get me wrong. These kids were quick and they're all over the court and Purdue had trouble. And we said, I said a lot. I mean, you guys agree with me. You know, the Purdue backcourt is not like dynamic. They don't have this great playmaker. They have a bunch of spot up shooters. Basically, they can bring the ball up and they couldn't get set and they could not figure out how to get the ball to Edie against a 6 foot six forward.
We said it, Darren. They looked like they were playing scared half that game. It just looked like they were playing scared half that game. But, Kev, Darren, we'll come back to you in a sec. Just yep. So that you know, the first game goes to overtime that we're watching. No sooner does that game end, but there's like a minute and a half left in Furman and Virginia. And the crowd is already a little crazy from the first overtime game. And then The second game, it's a buzzer beater with Furman just knocking out the number four seed Virginia. It was a crazy sight. Dad, go ahead. Keep it
to
up.
To which I get two texts to me. Well, one text immediately and one a little later that my bracket is blown up because I had Virginia winning it all from two different people because I run the stupid pool. And it was just one of those things where we just had great, great basketball. I mean, the upsets were everywhere. And that's what you expect. And Kev, you actually asked, or was it Gino that? No, Gino, you asked, do we think there's going to be more upsets than usual? And I was like, I don't know if it's going to be more. I said, I don't think so because, you know, the teams are so evenly matched. I don't know how much of the upsets, but you don't expect 16, 15, and 13 to pull it off like in the first, you know, the first day. You know, 16 over 1 only happened one time before. 15 over 2 has happened very, very infrequently. And you thought of Arizona as just mighty 15 that was just so big and so talented that they couldn't fall. You thought of Purdue as their tallest player is 6'6", guarding a 7 foot four guy. How are they going to respond? And then you thought of Furman as, wow, they're going to play like Virginia, but Virginia's going to just do it better. And none of that really happened. I mean, each one of those teams deserved the upsets. It was really kind of fun. G?
So we did talk about, did we think there were going to be a lot of upsets? You know, seeding-wise, there were really only five upsets in the first round. The problem is they took out a four seed, a two seed, and a one seed in the first 2 days. And not only that, but then the second days, that Saturday, Sunday, we saw a slew of teams go down. And absolutely. Then, you know, you take the 4 days together, and there were a lot of upsets. But those first 2 days, there's only four or five lower seeds that really won. And two of them were nines beating eights. You know, it was Florida Atlantic beating Memphis and Auburn beating Iowa. But, you know, other than that, you had the three huge upsets. And
Penn State also won as the 10-7.
Right, right.
Penn State beat Texas A&M.
And
yeah.
Pitt over
– and Pitt the 11 over the 6. Yeah. You know, so that was the other one. Pitt knocked off Iowa State. Yep.
Yeah.
But those were them. It was not numbers wise. It wasn't humongous, but overall, you know, what can you say? Overall capacity of the losses were overwhelming to a certain extent. It was like brackets were busted on the first day and the first weekend. You lose Kansas, you lose Purdue, you know, you lose Virginia. I mean, you lose Marquette, who in the pool that we are in, you know, more people picked Marquette than Purdue in that region. And yeah. We had the stat last week that teams that were unranked to start the season that were seeded one or two, about half of them made it to the second weekend. In this bracket, none of them made it to the, not even one out of two. I picked against Marquette. I did not pick against Purdue to get to the second weekend. Clearly, I was wrong. Just it's one of those things, Jake.
And that's the key. Is when you take the 4 days combined, you know, we lost two number one seeds. We lost two number two seeds. We lost one number three seed. We lost two number four seeds. That's a lot of high seedings that are gone on the first weekend. Darren?
And for one of the few times ever, no 12 beat a 5. Though Drake did everything in their power to give their game to Miami. And Gino and I are watching, and there's this crazy Drake guy sitting there saying, just take it to the basket, because they were just basically with 4 minutes to go playing not to lose, passing around and taking a jumper, and nobody was driving, and they allowed Miami to get back into it, and which Miami did. But we were like, this is the most intriguing 12-5 set that we've seen in a while. And to be honest with you, not 112 was able to beat a five. So I think that the fives were on notice that these 12s was something special. I mean, you know, it was, listen, great start to the tournament. Exciting things happening. So now we go down to the 16. You can't ever tell me, by the way, that these first 4 days aren't the most four exciting days in sports, because they just are. Because it's at game seven constantly. Every game, somebody's going home. There's nothing that compares to it. I mean, there just isn't. Princeton's not supposed to win two games. And even though their second game wasn't close, they are a story among stories as a 15. And they were so overshadowed by FDU that the FDU guys already got a new job. And you've heard more about them this week than you have Princeton, who's in it. You know, I mean, you know, in 2 years in a row, teams from Jersey winning that 15-2 matchup. Pretty wild. Kev? No? Yeah. Okay. I thought you had your hand. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
So let's talk about the teams that are left. Let's go into a little detail on some of the brackets, Darren. Let's start with the South.
Okay.
We got Alabama against San Diego State. We got Creighton versus Princeton. Anything you want to bring up with how those teams got there?
Alabama looks like the best team in the tournament. They haven't really been pressured or pressed. Even when Miller is shooting horribly, they win by double digits. Now, again, the best team that they've played so far is Maryland, who was as inconsistent as you can get. But Maryland came out, punched them in the mouth to start that game, and Alabama just kind of took it from there. San Diego State's been really good, but again, they beat Charleston and Furman. So, you know, they haven't even played a high major yet, but they look great. I mean, they made Furman look like garbage in that game. Creighton, I don't think, missed against Baylor. I don't know if there was a missed shot. I missed it. I didn't see it. They were lights out, and Kalkbrenner is such a matchup nightmare for a lot of teams. You wouldn't expect him to be a matchup nightmare for a Big 12 team. And he didn't have a huge day, but his presence was the reason why these guys were open shooting. When you put it together and you put the guards down for Creighton against the guards down for Baylor, I thought Baylor had the advantage. But watching that game, nope, Creighton did not miss a shot. And then finally in the bottom, Princeton, as you know, listen, I mean, it's a wonderful story. These kids can shoot. They rebound. They play physical. They find a way. They were tested against Arizona, but won it, and then they blew out Missouri. Missouri was never in it. Missouri cut it to nine, and you're like, oh, okay, you know, they got it to nine. That was about the best they did the entire second half. Princeton was not threatened. And again, you don't think of them as a big physical team. They tied for first, really technically got the second seed in the Ivy League tournament. Wonder how good Yale could have been in this tournament, I guess. But, you know, in the South, when you look at it, the two best teams – you know, on seeding play each other, and the two lower seeds play each other. So Creighton and Princeton remind me a bit of a microcosm of each other. They're both going to be good shooting, passing teams. Obviously, the difference is Creighton has the big guy in the middle. Not that Princeton doesn't have a big guy, but they don't have Kalkbrenner. And Bama, San Diego State's the contrast in styles, the one we were hoping to see between either them or Virginia. And against Alabama. So we're going to see if Alabama can get that speed up or if San Diego State can slow it down. It's really exciting to see. G?
All right, Darren. So Alabama versus San Diego State. Pick?
I like Alabama. Kev?
Yeah, you got to go Alabama right now. They're looking like the number one overall. They're playing like it.
I would love to pick San Diego State in the game, and I can't. Alabama's just looking way too strong right now. In the other game, Creighton versus Princeton. Darren?
I like Creighton. It's hard for me to think Princeton gets to the eight. I just have a hard time feeling it. I'm rooting for Princeton, just like I'm rooting for San Diego. I think Creighton's going to win it.
Kev?
I'm going to go with my heart. I'm going to go with Princeton. I want to see them do it. I want to see the pool of St. Peter's last year and get to these final eight.
I hope you're right, bud.
I honestly think if they were going to draw a team in this game, I think Creighton is not the worst team for them to draw. Princeton could come out and shoot. They could put points up on the board. But I think at the end of the day, Creighton winds up pulling this one out. I'm going to take Creighton in that game as well. Let's move down to the East bracket, Darren.
Well, this is the bracket that's blown up. And the funny thing is that I still have a chance to get through this bracket. So FDU FAU, which nobody had, was an exciting second round match. And you know what? FDU hung in there with them. I mean, Florida, first and foremost, the Florida Atlantic Memphis first round game was really, really a good basketball game. Memphis led, Florida Atlantic led. They went back and forth. There was a technical call that kind of turned the tide a little bit for a bit on the Memphis play when they were pushing back and forth. But wow, didn't expect that. Nobody expected the 9-16, and then Florida Atlantic kind of got through. Tennessee, who struggled with Louisiana, got built up an 18-point lead, then gave it all back. Thank God, because I only bet Tennessee, so thank God we couldn't cover that one. Going up against the world beaters of Duke. Now, I got a very confident in Tennessee in that Duke matchup as soon as I saw Virginia lose. I saw Miami struggle, and I said, wow, this NC State didn't play great against Creighton. And I was just saying to myself, this ACC just isn't that good. And everybody's anointing Duke. And let me show John Shire's parents again on TV and all this stuff about how great they are. And it's like Tennessee are men. I mean, they are just a nasty physical. They're a rough team to play. And they did go 4-6 in their last 10, but every game was close. They got beat by a 3 at the buzzer by Vanderbilt on a deflected pass. I mean, they found ways to lose that were interesting. So Tennessee, you know, after their win, and Duke dominated Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts wasn't in that game. We were hoping that we were going to see a game, and we didn't. Tennessee beat the crap out of Duke. You know, Jay Billis is crying. Oh, they're too physical. And shut the hell up. Filipowski flopped twice in the first three plays. I don't want to hear it from these Duke fans. Enough of this crap. Then you had Kentucky Providence, which was a good first round matchup. Kentucky kind of pulled away late, and Kansas State, you know, held off Montana State. Montana State kept it within anywhere between 8 and 14 the whole way. And then Kansas State, people that – and I follow the team kind of closely, but people that don't watch Marquise Noel got to see who Marquise Noel is. And he is one of the – he's probably the first player since Muggsy Bogues under 5'8 that can dominate a game. He literally controlled that entire game. He was making dimes with behind-the-back passes in line, hitting threes that were slightly contested. He was great. The one thing you didn't see is that Keyonte Johnson is actually the best player on that team. And Kentucky held him in check. They put Toppin on him, 6'9 against 6'6, and he couldn't get the shots off. So, but Kansas State got through. And then finally, Michigan State all of a sudden turned on a switch. They were a mediocre Big Ten team all year. Win one, lose one, not that physical. They jumped out and beat up USC, who I like. So therefore I was wrong about them in the first round. And then they dominated Marquette. I don't think it was much of a game, guys. I mean, I just thought that Michigan State was the far better team from the tap. G?
For me, Izzo has now become the Coach K.
You hate
it. I can't root against Michigan State hard enough anymore. And that used to be what I felt with Duke, and now it's switched to Michigan State.
I still feel it with Duke. But so you got these matchups. So now we go there's teams that were not expected. Tennessee, what did I say to you guys last week? Why do you like Tennessee to get to the four? Because when you expect something from Rick Barnes, he doesn't deliver. But when you don't, he just might. And suddenly, right now, if they get to beat Florida Atlantic, they make a Final Eight. You know, so it's very interesting.
Jake? I went last week when we were doing picks and we were going through brackets and I made my bracket picks. I went with two assumptions and both assumptions turned out to be completely wrong. I thought the injuries for Tennessee and Houston were going to hinder their performances, and neither one, it turns out, it had any effect on them up to this point anyway. All right, so in the East, we got Florida Atlantic and Tennessee. Darren?
I picked Tennessee to get out of the bracket. It's a little easier than it was when I originally made the pick. I had them playing Purdue here. I'm going to take Tennessee to win that game.
Kev?
Yeah, I'm going to go Tennessee. They're looking good, and they're really bringing the game down to the mud as they did against Duke, and they have the ability to just play physical against anybody.
Yeah, it's a clean sweep. I agree with you guys. I think
when your guards are 6'6 and physical, it's a very different game. They hold the game into the 50s.
The other matchup, we got Kansas State, the 3 seed, against Michigan State, the 7 seed. Darren?
Well, I picked Kansas State to win this game in my original pick, so I'm going to stick with it again. I think that they beat Kentucky without Johnson playing well, and they really didn't get – I mean, Masood hit a big shot, but that was the only shot he hit. They have 3 kids from New York City on that team. that, you know, from Manhattan to Manhattan, it's been a story kind of all year about the three kids from Manhattan, and now they get to play in New York City. I'm going to say that they find a way to sneak by Michigan State. Kev?
You talk about coaching. Tom Izzo is one of those guys that you feel like if he doesn't lose on the first weekend, he makes the Final Four.
It's true.
I was shocked at how well Michigan State played against Marquette. I think they keep it going. I think Michigan State pulls off the upset here against Kansas State.
It's not an upset. Michigan State's the favorite.
Really?
The betting favorite is Michigan State by a point and a half.
Wow.
I just can't root for Izzo, so I'm picking Kansas State.
The thing to note about Kansas State and the lack of respect is a three seed. They were underdog to Kentucky by 3 points, the six seed, and they're underdog to Michigan State, the seven seed. I'm just saying. I mean, and they were only in the 314, they're only an 8-point favorite over Montana State.
So Darren,
they're a good team. How are they underdogs?
They're underdogs because they're Kansas State. Nobody knows who they are. They're not Kansas.
They're a real good team. God.
Yeah, but they go up against Calipari, and then you go up against Izzo. That's why. It's the point. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows who Jerome Tang is. 20 years ago, this guy's coaching high school. He, Scott Drew shows up at his house. His wife makes like a meatloaf or something. They have no money. They're coaching high school in some small, poor town. He gives him the job. He's been the assistant the last 20 years. Nobody knows who Jerome Tang is. He's going to be coaching a year, maybe. It's kind of funny.
So Darren, you actually had Tennessee versus Kansas State in this matchup, right?
Yeah, but I had Kansas State beating USC. Now it's against Marquette. And I had Tennessee over Purdue, and now it's against Florida Atlantic. So I'm not going to sit there and pat myself on the back that I killed it in this bracket. But, I have Tennessee beating Kansas State and getting at it.
Okay. All right, let's move to the Midwest. We got the one seed Houston versus the five seed Miami. And we got the three seed Xavier versus the two seed Texas.
Darren. Just a couple points in this bracket before we get into it. Auburn jumped out on Houston. Houston needed everything they had to come back. And then once they started going, they didn't stop. I mean, I was like, I picked Houston, so I was kind of rooting for them to get through. And I didn't want to hear Charles Barkley bragging about Auburn anymore. So I was like, you know what? Let's let Houston get by him. And once they caught up, they just blew right by him. All of a sudden, Auburn lost all composure with a good backcourt. Sasser played great. He was the difference. First round, Northern Kentucky kept it kind of close too, so you didn't know. Not close, but it never got over 20, you know, so that was interesting. Auburn beat the stuffing out of Iowa, so that Iowa was never really a factor in their game. And then we talked about Miami. Miami should have lost to Drake. I mean, if you watch that game, Drake was the better team the whole way. And Indiana beat up Kent State, and then Miami controlled Indiana.
Killed me.
That backcourt. Well, here's the thing. I mean, that backcourt of Wong and Pack is as good as any backcourt in the country. There's nobody better. You might have somebody you might call equal. Nobody better than those two when they're both playing well. And Miller is like this wild card guy who's a swing guy who rebounds like a madman. They have the one big guy down low that does all the dirty work. And they have Larrañaga, who, by the way, may not get the credit for it, but he finds a way to win these tournament games too. He got to the eight last year. And that was without Pack. So they find their way up top. Pittsburgh did everything they could. You know, they won two games. They beat Iowa State after they won the Mississippi State game. Xavier just beat the crap out of them, though. Sean Miller is like, yeah, I know I played for Pittsburgh, but screw that. And, you know, Penn State, after dominating A&M in a game that stunned me, that killed me, I had A&M going to the four. Penn State. Then the guys that couldn't miss on Friday, so couldn't hit on Sunday, or Thursday, couldn't hit on Saturday. And they had Texas beaten, and then all of a sudden they just went cold in the last 3 minutes. Gee?
And we thought that was going to be, you and I sitting there, thought that was going to be a great game, Penn State, Texas A&M. And Penn State just came out and just, they couldn't miss. I mean, there was like a seven-minute stretch. I don't know if you were watching the games, Kev. They could not miss. It was just every possession down the court, boom, boom. And Darren's looking at me going, are they going to miss? Where is this coming from?
A really good defensive team. I thought that they were going to pound it in and get them in foul trouble. Did not matter. And Penn State, much like FDU, Micah Shrewsbury already got the job at Notre Dame, so he's already off and running. But then Penn State took the lead with about 4 minutes to go in the Texas game, and then they went cold. And they couldn't hit. They kept trying to feed Funk, and he couldn't hit anything. Texas got through. Texas looks – so now you're sitting there looking at yourself saying, well, we have a chance at Houston versus Texas, which is like little brother versus big brother. I think you said that last week, Kev, right, about the – or maybe you might have said it about Texas A&M. I'm not sure. But it's still the same thing. It's still the same thing. Everybody wants to beat up big, bad Texas in that state. So now Houston, you know, you get Houston versus Miami, who matches up well with them. And then you get Texas versus Xavier, who looks great. So we have a really nice matchup. This is the only bracket people can even honestly say that they might have gotten all right. Anyway, go ahead, Jake.
This was the only bracket that has the 1 and 2 seed still around. And if you're trying to think that it holds the seed, it's the 1, 2, 3, and 5. So out of all four brackets, that's the one that held up the best. We'll see what happens. Let's start it off. Houston, Miami. Darren?
You know, I picked Miami on my bracket. I'm sticking with it in this matchup. I'm sticking with Miami. I picked them to get to the 8. I'm going to stick with it.
Kev?
I think Houston second half against Auburn. Outscored him 50-23. Sasser looks like he's healthy enough. I'm going to go with Houston.
And that's the key point you just said is my point, which is Sasser looks like he's okay. And that was my problem last week. I kept saying, we don't know about Sasser. I'm not picking Houston. Well, Sasser's okay, and I'm picking Houston. In the other game, we got Xavier, Texas. Darren?
You know, I want to root for Xavier here so hard. I'm going to root for Xavier here so hard. I don't know if they have enough to beat Texas. Disu has kicked his game up a notch in the Big 12 tournament and in the first two rounds. He's become the go-to scorer inside that they haven't had all year. It's been the backcourt all year. It's been Hunter. It's been Carr. It's been these guys shooting the lights out. And now all of a sudden, Disu gives them an element that they really – I mean, they've had scoring from inside. I'm not trying to say they haven't, but he didn't miss a shot. I mean, he hit everything he put up.
We said it last week. He looked fantastic last week.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to pick Xavier anyway because I'm rooting for him. But I have no real reason behind it. Sean Miller, get me to the Final 8.
Kev?
I have Texas in my final format bracket. Not that it matters because my finals matchup is done. So I'm going to stick with Texas.
Everybody, Kev.
I'm picking Texas as well. I think they're just a little bit too much for Xavier. I think Xavier's a good team, though. I think it'll be a good game. And then we get to the West. How the West was won.
So Arkansas
and UConn are two of the four teams left. The other two are the big matchup we thought we were going to get, which is Gonzaga UCLA. Darren, talk to us about the West.
Well, starting off with Kansas, I mean, they struggled somewhat with Howard for about three quarters of that game. And then Arkansas, wow, I mean, I don't need to see Musselman rip his shirt off anymore standing on the scorer's table. But you got to admire this guy. He really is – he's really a no-crap guy. I mean, these kids are playing hard. I mean, Kansas kind of led most of the way in this game. And Arkansas kept battling back. And then Kansas stretched it out to 10 at one point. Arkansas battled back and found a way to pull it ahead. I was really impressed with how hard that team played. Now, I didn't see the whole game. It was my mom's birthday, so we were at dinner and stuff like that. But I saw enough of it. And, wow, I was really blown away. Arkansas dismantled Illinois. Illinois was really not much of a factor in that first-round game. Then you get to the St. Mary's VCU. St. Mary's looked really good in that matchup, and UConn kind of pulled away from Iona as well. And then St. Mary's, the kid Dukas, who's their best shooter, got hurt. And the game was close. St. Mary's was up at the time, and they just never responded. And Connecticut in both of these games, both the Iona game, which they trailed at the half, and the St. Mary's game, where they trailed most of the first half, they blew them out in the second half, if that's any indication of how Connecticut is getting stronger as games go on. TCU escaped against Arizona State, and I mean escaped. And then for some godforsaken reason, they must have went to Urbana 9 times down the stretch, and he missed every freaking shot. I'm like, go to somebody else. I mean, you're killing me, because I had TCU winning that game. So did Kev. I'm like, you know, Gonzaga's leaving you in this thing. I mean, Mike Miles, another guy you said that you were nervous about the injury. He didn't show any effects of the injury. He carried that team. The problem was they missed a bunch of foul shots. In the last, like, six possessions, they kept going to O'Bannon, who was taking fall-away threes, and he wasn't hitting any of them. I'm like, what is – how is this the offense? It's the last game. It's Sunday night. I'm exhausted. I want to go to bed. It's midnight. I got to work the next day. I'm like, why? And I'm like half asleep. Why are they going to O'Bannon? He's shown he's 1-for-9. Stop going to him. But they kept going to him. But nonetheless, Gonzaga finds a way. TCU jumped on him early. Gonzaga came back. Gonzaga struggled a little bit with Grand Canyon early, but they pulled away from their matchup. Northwestern really kind of beat the crap out of Boise State. They controlled them. Yeah. The Mountain West once again. Thank God for San Diego State, because this conference is becoming a joke in this tournament. Nobody wins. And then UCLA, you know, they controlled Asheville. Asheville was not a factor. The UCLA-Northwestern game, UCLA looked like they were running away with it. And then all of a sudden, Ordiz started to go off a little bit. And Boo Booey started hitting some shots too. And suddenly it was a game. Then it was tied. And then down the stretch, apparently my daughter's having a field day upstairs, but something. But sorry about the noise, everybody. But UCLA pulled away late. The best player on the court was Jaquez in that game. Pulled away, and now we get UCLA Gonzaga, which is the matchup most people wanted to see, even though I had UCLA TCU.
And UCLA, another team I wasn't sure how they were going to play with the injury.
Well, yeah. I mean, and listen, every one of your injury concerns were accurate, dude. I mean, listen, we don't know what Tennessee's going to be able to do in this round. I mean, if it's Florida Atlantic, I mean, their point guard's their best player. So we're going to find out if they can cover without Ziegler.
You may be correct in stating that my injury concerns were valid. However, none of them came into play. Not one of them. I would have liked one of them to at least to have come into play, but none of them. All right, so we got Arkansas, the 8 seed, against UConn, the 4 seed. Darren?
So in my bracket, I have UConn winning this game against Kansas. No, against Arkansas. I'm sorry. I did have this right. I'm going to Arkansas.
Ooh,
I think that Arkansas both teams are on a little bit of a special run. I think the peskiness of Arkansas is going to annoy Connecticut. I have Connecticut winning this game again in my bracket. I have UCLA versus UConn in the final eight. And I'm going against my pick here, and I'm taking Arkansas. Kev?
I had Kansas TCU in the final eight here, so take my pick for what it's worth. UConn, coming into the season, was supposed to be real good, and I think they're really starting to peak at the right time here. I'm going to go with UConn over Arkansas.
I'm taking Arkansas. I think they're on a roll. I think beating Kansas just gave them the push. I think they're ready to go. And the other game, Gonzaga versus UCLA, the 2 versus the 3. Darren?
Well, UCLA is my champion, right? And listen, they won the Northwestern game, and Tiger Campbell didn't hit a shot. UCLA will not beat Gonzaga if they don't. They need scoring from Tiger. They need scoring from Jaquez. They need scoring from Singleton. And they need scoring from Bailey. And they need Bona to stay out of foul trouble. They need all 5 of those things to beat this Gonzaga team. And it's not easy, but I think they'll get by in a really, really, really good game. I just don't know if they have anyone that can guard Timmy, which makes it hard, but I'm going with the Bruins. Kev?
I think this might be the matchup of the Sweet 16. This might be the best game. Like you said, Darren, evenly matched. This one should come down to the wire. I'm going to go with Gonzaga, squeaking it out.
I was on Timmy all year. I'll stay on Timmy and say it's Gonzaga over UCLA.
Like our consensus brackets, please pick against every single thing we just gave you. Because our consensus bracket sucks.
All right. We went through the brackets. Let's talk about a little bit of waterfall effect that happened after some of these games ended, and that is UConn beats Iona, and as a result, a new coach is going to St. John's, and that's Pitino.
71 years young.
Hoping to bring a little enthusiasm back to St. John's in the Garden. St. John's hasn't made the tournament in a very long time. And that starts the waterfall effect, because then there's an opening at Iona, and the coach that just took a 16 to beat a 1, is moving from FDU to Iona. Darren, want to talk to us about a couple of these coaching moves?
Well, basically, so St. John's fires Mike Anderson. Mike Anderson is suing St. John's because St. John's is saying they're firing him with cause because of graduation rates. You know, whatever. Just pay the guy his money. Stop with the crap. Listen, Mike Anderson brought the team back to somewhat respectability, don't get me wrong, but never was he able to beat a good team, schedule, make a good schedule in the preseason and get them to a tournament. Rick Pitino brings immediate credibility. He brought Providence to the Final Four. He won championships with both Kentucky and Louisville. He knows how to coach. In his first 2 days on the job, he was up at Stepanak, seeing a top 10 five-star kid. He already offered a kid out in California that was a number 7 recruit in the country for 2 years from now. I mean, he's already up running and rolling. The kids that are playing for Anderson are going to, for the most part, love playing for Pitino because it's a similar style of just playing aggressive defense, just not the full court press the whole time. We need, in this area, let's be honest, we need St. John's to make college basketball relevant in the city again. St. John's is one of those adoptive teams. I mean, listen, as much as I make fun of the NBA, when the Knicks are good, there's a buzz around New York City. It just is. And when St. John's is good, there's a buzz around the Garden and the Big East that doesn't exist when they're not good. The Big East tournament, it becomes a ticket you can't get. You know, all these things. And I think that Pitino brings this back because, listen, you know what? All of a sudden, Providence takes a step back as Cooley leaves to go to Georgetown. So now it's a race of Pitino versus Cooley. Who's going to build up St. John's or Georgetown quicker? You know, there's a lot to it, Kev. You have to say something? I'm sorry.
That's a move I didn't understand, was Cooley going from Providence to Georgetown.
It's got to be about money because I can't figure anything else.
Yeah.
And prestige. I mean, listen, Georgetown, I mean, listen, you know, urban youth grew up loving Georgetown. And the fact that Georgetown's in the dumper, we were sad about it, seeing Patrick lose. We hated Georgetown. All three of us hated Georgetown growing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's something about it.
But I think that was more about Patrick than Georgetown, really.
Yeah, I think so, too. But nonetheless, I had caught myself rooting for Georgetown more than I think I have in my life.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, so Cooley goes. And now, you know, Seton Hall has their new coach from last year. And the Big East has a little upheaval. Villanova's not the Villanova that we've seen. You know, Marquette becomes the best team in the conference along with Creighton, which are not the – original Big East teams. So we need those original Big East teams to get strong again. And that starts with St. John's and Villanova and Georgetown. So it'd be nice to see the balance of power switch a little bit. And I think these two coaching moves help both, in my opinion.
All right. Any other final college basketball notes before we move on?
Just a couple of quick things. You know, FDU, Tobin Anderson, you mentioned him. He goes over to Iona. So he gets the job. 2 years ago, this guy's coaching St. Thomas Aquinas, probably making nothing, brings three Division II kids in. We make fun of FDU getting into the tournament because Merrimack was the better team. Merrimack beat him in the conference final. What a joke. Why are they even allowing him to play? They shouldn't even let Merrimack in the tournament, the whole thing. This guy's parlayed 2 years into a legit job at Iona, which is a – listen, I mean, Kev hates Iona because he's a Manhattan guy, but it's a prominent school in that league, in the MAC.
Yeah.
He got one of the best jobs in the MAC out of nowhere. So, I mean, so it's a really, really good step up for them.
And if he has a good job, if he does well there, he'll move up again in a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. The MAC is that stepping stone. And, you know, Pitino put in his time. He gave 3 years to Iona. It's not like he didn't. You know, yep. He came back, he gave us 3 years, and at 71, signing a 6-year deal is kind of interesting, but we'll see what happens.
All right. And then we get to baseball. Lots happened in a week.
Anything happened, Kev?
So we
I've been waiting 7 days for this one, Kev.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. We saw it. We all saw it. It's a celebration after a victory in the World Baseball Classic. And all-star Met closer Edwin Diaz is doing a little jumping up and down, and then he falls down, and they need to take him out on a wheelchair to get him off the field because he can't walk on his own power. Turns out it's an injury. It's not a good injury, and he's done for the year. Kev, I'm going to read you a little quote before I let you have it, let you take the floor. But it's a quote from one of our listeners, from Mr. Paul. And he wrote, if any of the participating New York Mets take another at-bat, throw a baseball, catch a baseball, do any running around, joking, laughing with any of their meaningless teammates in the worthless baseball classic, it's a disgrace. Kev, I will give you the floor.
If this podcast was recorded last Wednesday night, I think you would have been hearing me spit fire. I've had a week to calm down. when you watch the players, and I only saw some of the highlights. I didn't watch any World Baseball Classic game. I don't care about the World Baseball Classic. There's a couple of guys playing for the country. The players looked like they really enjoyed it. The players were out there caring. So I give them kudos for wanting to be there. And when you see, what was it? Puerto Rico beat Dominican Republic there in the to go on to the next round. And the joy on those players, it's great for the players. They, like I said, they were enjoying it. Some of the crowds, obviously, they drew some capacity crowds.
Over a million stands.
Yeah. And I think especially, Manfred came out today. He wants to see more of the star pitchers in the next time in 2026. This is not real baseball when you've got pitchers who'll building up, still on pitch counts. You're not able to use the pitchers that you want. There are strict rules in place. Clubs don't want you to use it. For hitters, I think it's a different story. Hitters, you get up there, you want your at-bats. I'm sure it's a lot different for them than getting, three bats in a backfield in spring training. There's no interest in me for the World Baseball Classic, and it's a shame that Diaz is out for the year. Houston can't be feeling too good without Tuve out for at least 2 months with a thumb surgery.
Yep.
The Dodgers probably escaped a major blow. Freeman just returned in the last day or two. Looks like he's healthy, checking all the boxes. Should be in line to start opening day. But these meaningless exhibition games, I know everybody's going to say, yeah, spring training's meaningless. It's just... But to me, you're with your team trying to get ready for the season. I think all of us as a Met fan, as you guys as Yankee fans, you want to see your team get ready for the season. And you don't care about this other stuff. And, I've got Alonso on Team USA. I've got Lindor and Diaz on this team and this guy on that team. Doesn't matter to me who's playing what. And I've never liked the pros playing in any of these, especially the Olympics and things like that. 2014 Winter Olympics, when John Tavares, the trader, was still on the Islanders, and he gets hurt in the Olympics, he's out for the rest of the season. That killed me then. Back in the late 90s, and I passionately hate the New York Rangers. And here I'm watching USA Russia. And gotta go with USA. But USA's got Brian Leetch, and they've got Mike Richter. And I'm watching Russia, who's got Alexei Yashin, and I was drawing a blank on the other Islander. It's like, I'm rooting for Yashin. Yashin's coming in on Richter. So let's say the situation was Yashin coming on the breakaway and Richter. Who am I rooting for there?
You're rooting for the Americans.
But I'm rooting for Yashin. I hate Richter.
It does nothing for you. He's not playing for your team then.
Go ahead, let's get back to the World Baseball Classic.
I said it last week, and I agree. I still think this tournament should be played in November. Sorry. This game should not be the kickoff the season, because now, say Edwin Diaz got hurt in the listen, it was a flukish thing, but you saw the joy and excitement on the team's plays. I didn't watch one pitch, okay? Didn't watch one pitch. Saw a couple of highlights. Didn't watch one pitch, But when you see the joy that the Venezuelan team had as their fans are singing in the crowd, you know, it means something to all these Latin American countries and Japan as well. It really did mean a ton to everybody. I mean, Italy, come on. It's a bunch of American kids with last names that ended in a vowel. You know, the Netherlands, similar thing. I mean, the same crowd. Nobody cares about those. Canada, you had a team at least. You know, then Morneau is retired. Who do they have? They had nobody left. Right? So, you know, and all this stuff. But, I mean, Larry Walker, I guess, you know, back in the day. But you saw these guys getting all excited and getting pumped up, and it was kind of cool, and you feel awful. Oh, I mean, you know, listen, Kev, I joke. Feel awful for Mets fans. I feel awful for Edwin Diaz. Well, I'll say this, though. I'll say this for Stevie Cohen, right? So Edwin Diaz gets diagnosed, and the first thing Steve Cohen does is sends to his house a nutritionist, a rehab guy, and a chef. You're part of the family. We're going to get you healthy. We're going to get you back. If you're a Met fan and you don't love what this guy does on these little small things, you're crazy. Now, the fact that Brandon Nemo can't slide blew my mind. I don't know what he did. He got caught running on dirt. I didn't know how that happened. It was the most awkward thing ever. I mean, I've seen people get caught up in the grass. I've never seen a cleat get caught up in dirt like that. I don't know how that happened. I mean, I know he can't steal a base, but the guy can run and slide into bases. That blew me away. That injury was more shocking. I mean, and the fact that just how it happened. I mean, maybe not more shocking, but the World Baseball Classic is a November event. You know, some of these pitchers will pitch, and some of them will be like, I'm tired. I can't go another month of the season. It's a novelty, like you said, Kevin. It's really good to bring baseball together around the world and get some excitement in Latin American countries. It's like watching CONCACAF and freaking, when the U.S. is trying to qualify for the soccer tournament. Mexico's the best, U.S. is the second, and everybody else is trying for the third and fourth spots. That's kind of what it is. But the U.S., you know, if you're a Met fan, your season, not that it's blown up and not that you're not going to win, not that it gets to the mess, but now you're banking on David Robertson or maybe signing Britton. I mean, you know, it's like these are not – this is not what you were thinking of. You were hoping Robertson was going to give you seventh and eighth inning stuff. Now you need him to pitch in the ninth. And, you know, he didn't look great with Philly last year. And he hasn't looked great in a couple of years. Maybe he'll be outstanding and dynamic. And for Met fans, I hope he is. But this, even though the Latin fans love this, this is a miss for the Major League Baseball, in my opinion. It's got to be at the end of the season, not the beginning. Jake?
I agree with you. I do think this needs to be November. And if anybody wants to talk about how it won't work in November or December, look at what the World Cup just did, how exciting that was. And that was in the middle of winter also. So it can work. But I think with the World Baseball Classic, I think it's a much bigger deal outside of the United States. If you are a baseball fan in the United States and you follow the Yankees, the Mets, you're a Dodger fan. I think that's what your primary followings are. And outside of that, it's very little interest in the World Baseball Classic. I also did not watch any of it other than looking at highlights. I think if you're in any of these other countries, I think it's a big deal. And listen, the injury could have happened anywhere. It could have happened in spring training. But the fact of the matter is it happened in the World Baseball Classic. It happened because he was participating with this team. And if you listen, I love what Cohen did. I do. But if you're Cohen, you got to be beside yourself when that injury happens, because you're paying this guy a hell of a lot of money to pitch for your team. And here is a meaningless exhibition game. And he's now done for the year, and the Mets are going to scramble a little bit to figure out who their closer is. Listen, I don't have a doubt that the Mets will find the closer, whether it's internal on who's on their roster or if it's towards a trade deadline when they acquire somebody. They will bring a closer in here, especially if they're good, and we think they're going to be good. So I think they will figure out a way, but it's a major blow to this team. There's no way around it. Darren?
The one thing I'll say, and I don't know if this is an indictment on the team he plays for or excitement about this tournament, but Mike Trout has already re-upped the play. And basically, this is the only big games this guy gets to play. Yeah. I mean, this is a super talent. I mean, Ohtani coming in to strike out Trout, you almost feel like it was scripted. I mean, but you know what? Whatever. It worked out. I mean, you know, it's an exciting moment. I didn't see it, but the two teammates going up against each other. And, you know, I mean, and Trout wanting to play, and guys that, I mean, and Gleyber Torres, one last comment, then I'll pass it back to you, said, I've never gotten to play in a World Series here as a Yankee, but I can't imagine it'd be more exciting than playing for Venezuela. So some of these guys really live for this moment. I just don't think that the average Major League Baseball fan that is not of Latin descent feels the same passion as the Latin descent American or from the other country feels. Just my take, G.
The one thing I got to say about this is that we've already heard today, after Japan won the World Baseball Classic yesterday, that the Ohtani coming in relief against Trout is one of the classic at-bats, and I can't agree more that it is not. It is no way a classic at-bat. You're telling me this compares to Kirk Gibson hitting the home run off Eckersley? It just doesn't. Larson's perfect. It does not. Okay, so I know it's Ohtani, I know it's Trout, but everybody needs to calm down with this crap about this being like this huge. First off, he didn't even hit the ball. It's not like this was a 10-pitch at bat. It was four pitches. He was done. He struck him out. He didn't put the ball in play. It wasn't this great play. It, to me, it's already getting overblown. I know
it's not Jackson versus Welch.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
Not even Jackson Welch with an East 1-1 is exciting. This is in I don't mean meaningless, but you're right, G. It's a meaningless tournament. So, you know, you struck a guy out in spring training. We clap hands. We move on. Japan wins. The U.S. loses. U.S.'s best pitcher on the starting rotation was, what, Lance Lynn? I mean, we didn't really send anybody dynamic out there. You know, not that I'm care that we won or lost or any of that stuff, but I agree with you, Jay. You're right, this is overblown like to the umpteenth. Kev?
Well, like I said, you know, it was one of the early round games that I forget which reliever it was. They had to bring him in to get out of the inning. He threw like three pitches. But because it's spring training and because it's only his second or third outing, they don't want him to come back in the dugout, sit for the half inning, and then come back out. So now you got to make another pitching change. You're not playing with real baseball rules here.
No, you're not. You're just not. It's a totally different game. I'm excited for the Latin American countries they get to play and all that other stuff. But the fact is, either play it in November or play it with minor league players.
Agreed.
Non-major league players. You know, I don't know. You can't break it up like, listen, I don't like it when hockey breaks for the Olympics. I don't think that baseball should break for 2 weeks. Because I'll still get just as angry that my team just lost a guy to an injury pitching in a big spot for the playoff run. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of joy on the players' faces and the fans' faces, but this is not something that everybody's going to appreciate. Kev?
Yeah, midseason, do I want Scherzer and Verlander and pitching for Team USA trying to go 7 or 8 innings?
Of course not. You don't want them. You don't. You want them rested whenever you can rest them. I mean, that's just what it comes down to.
Any other baseball points anybody want to bring up, Darren?
Volpe's got to beat this team, and he's got to start at shortstop. Enough of the crap. He's better than Peraza. He's a lot better than Peraza. He's got to play. I can't handle this enough. The fact that I have to wait this out. To be honest, the other kid should be up too. The outfielder, was Dominguez.
Dominguez.
He should be up too. I mean, don't invite a guy to spring training and tell him he has to work for a position if he actually earns it and you still won't give him the job. At that point, don't let him play. Because what are you supposed to tell a kid like Dominguez? He earned the job. And that's it. You're not going to make it.
If Dominguez does not make this roster because they put somebody like Cabrera or they want to make sure they have both Peraza and Volpe on this team, I'm okay. But if Dominguez doesn't make this roster and Willie Calhoun makes this roster, you're going to hear me yelling and screaming that day. I'll tell you right now.
He earned the job. Kev, you were going to say something, bud?
Brett Beatty has to make the Mets roster.
I think that's a given now. I think he has to.
He needs to be a third baseman. I mean, sure, you get a tough lefty. Maybe you want to put Escobar out there, fine. But Escobar was, by some of the defensive metrics, one of the worst third basemen in baseball last year. Brett Beatty can't do any worse over there, and the guy can hit.
And Beatty also made a couple of nice sparkling defensive plays in spring training, to be honest with you. I've seen him make a couple of diving plays. He's got a good bat. Fans, except for Gino, 99.9% of fans want to see their young talent play.
Yeah.
Just Gino doesn't. The rest of us like watching our homegrown guys. You give me the finger all you want, pal. You're the one that said you don't care about it.
Kevin and I do. I don't care to your degree about it when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of a hometown guy. I do like seeing the kids up here. Kev, any point you want to make on Alvarez being sent down?
Yeah, I think it was the right call.
Yeah, he struggled
at the plate. He was only 3-for-28. He got a taste of catching the big league pitchers, which was good. Now he needs to go down. The kid's 21. And he's a catcher. Go down to AAA, catch every day. Get the bat hot. If the bat gets hot enough, he'll work his way back up here, even if it's as a DH, and maybe catch once a week. But get down there, keep working defensively, and start crushing the ball like we know you can.
Just a point on that. It took Posada forever to get up here. I'm not saying Posada's the greatest catcher of all time, and he's not a Hall of Famer by any stretch, but he's a really good above-average catcher. This kid has the potential to be an all-world catcher.
Don't rush him.
You don't have to at 21. If he was 24 and you're like, listen, he had a tough spring, but I want him to be our guy, I get it. At 21, I agree with you, Kev. He doesn't need to be up here.
21, he had about a month or two at AAA only?
Yeah, exactly. Let's let him see some pitching.
Yep.
And they have listen, they also have – they have Narvaez up here. They have Nito up here. They'll be okay for now. It's not going to kill them by not having the kid up here at the moment. So, okay.
My only thing is just sometimes these teams protect these guys so much, and now they're nothing. For years, Floreal was untouchable. Untouchable. Now the guy can't even hit 200 in spring training. I mean, it was always like, well, Floreal. I remember screaming for Judge the year before they brought him up. I'm like, enough. Let these guys play. I can't keep hearing about them for years. Now, you want to see them as they're getting older play. But, you know, the kid's 21. I think he's young. I'm just saying Floreal's a guy because he sticks in your head because the Yankees always had him as the untouchable prospect. Now he's not going to make the team. He's out of options. There's all sorts of problems with him. He's not going to be a Yankee anymore. You could have used him as a chip in a trade. They never did. All this other stuff. Anyway. Baseball is always interesting about that stuff. But we are a week away from the season, boys. It's coming up. Our fantasy draft is Sunday. We're excited about it. So a lot of good things happening. Jake?
Okay. Why don't we move over to NBA? You want to touch on the NBA? We'll touch on the NHL. Kev, want to start with the NBA?
Yeah. Sad news came out yesterday. Willis Reed passing away at 80 years old. Rookie of the year, MVP in 1970, seven-time All-Star, member of the 50th and 75th anniversary teams in the NBA, won two titles with the Knicks, the great Willis Reed moment, walking out hobbled in Game 7 of the 1970 Championship Series, scored the first two baskets, only two baskets he scored. Clyde Frazier had that huge game, 36-19 or something.
I was phenomenal that evening, but the game is more remembered for Willis's heroics. That's his quote. I love that quote. Sorry, had to say it. Go ahead.
That's fine. Probably I would consider him the greatest Knick of all time because he was.
I'd probably put Frazier ahead of him, but it's close, buddy. It's close. I agree with you. I love Bernard King. He's my favorite player of all time. But I can't disagree with. I mean, imagine walking out with one leg and having to go up against Wilt. I'm just saying. Of all people, you know, the guy standing across from me is Wilt freaking Chamberlain, who's bullying everybody, banged 10,000 women, done everything in the world that could possibly be done, and you're there with one leg and about 4 inches short and having to go out there and guard Wilt. I was like, Jesus Christ.
And he did.
And he did. He did it. Craziness.
Yep.
I had one other point when you're done. Just as, and I want your opinion on this, because I saw this dumb argument from J.J. Redick. They were talking about three-point shooters, and it was actually with Russo. I don't know if you saw this, G, because you watch him sometimes. And Russo was arguing that Bird was a great three-point shooter, one of the best of all time. And Redick said that there's no way because his percentages are nowhere close to Steph Curry and some of these other guys. Did you not understand the physicality of the NBA in the 1980s and 90s? J.J. Redick, what are you talking about? He's talking about how, well, Marcus Smart covers Steph Curry very physically as well. Are you kidding me? First and foremost, the league was back then, you know, you didn't shoot a lot of threes. You shot a lot of twos back then, fadeaway twos. You weren't lined up from three. You got buckets. They actually used post players at the time. He played with guys like McHale and Parrish, who both played in the post, and he could play in the post too, revolutionized his game. But when he was shooting the ball, there was nobody sweeter. You're going to tell me that Reggie Miller was a horrible three-point shooter because his percentage isn't as good as Steph? These guys were getting mugged night in and night out. Mugged. They weren't getting touched. They were getting mugged. Now you watch an NBA game, and I'm not trying to insult the product because it is what it is. A guy can drive through the paint, look around, and dish off to an open three-point shooter as four guys are spreading the court. Back then, you drove into the paint to make a pass, and Lane Beer clotheslined you. Mason elbowed you in the head. Ewing smacked you in the head. What are you? J.J. Redick, typical Duke moron. Moron. That is the dumbest argument ever. Larry Bird could do is the most wrongly ridiculed superstar of all time. Never makes anybody's top five or top ten. They act like Larry Bird was just a pretty good player. They act like the Isaiah Thomas, if he was black, he'd be another player comment. Larry Bird was amazing. And the fact that people crap on that just blows my mind. Boys, any opinion on this?
Well, one of the biggest trash talkers in NBA history.
Oh, the best.
And backed it up.
Always did. Dominique Wilkins went after J.J. Redick on this one, by the way.
Good.
And Dominique was one of those guys that that Bird used to abuse on the court a little bit. I mean, Dominique scored him too, by the way, but still.
They're the classic fourth quarter where they each score 20.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing.
Back and forth.
Amazing. With physicality.
And Larry from the corner, you turn around to the bench. That's good. As the ball's halfway. Just out of his release. That's good.
So I don't know what you guys think about it. JJ's thing that Bird is not a top three-point shooter of all time because he's I think the argument is top three or top five. To me, he's got to be one of the best. Just my opinion.
Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, Bird was one of the first 50-40-90 guys. 50% from field, 40% from three, 90% for the foul line. And that's before the three-point shot was really a big part of the game at that point anyway. So if he was playing under today's rules where he had room to operate, he'd be hitting he'd be leading the league in scoring. he averaged 25, 26 points a game with minimal threes. He'd average 35 these days with the way he could shoot.
Gee, any thoughts on it?
It's a lot of recency bias from J.J. Redick. Just looking at the guys that are playing today, how they're playing today, and I think this happens a lot right now, and that is a lot of these people do not understand how the game was played back then. And even though he was such a good shooter, he didn't take them because people were getting smashed left and right on the court. And, you know, that's not how you just go near the guy and there's a foul called now. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
I mean, listen, let's be honest. He also played 82 games.
Yeah.
Which these idiots don't do anymore. And I'm not saying it's their fault or wrong. They might be getting benched by their coaches. I'm not saying it's on them. But back then, the NBA player was an Iron Man, and he tried to play every night because they understood that they were trying to build this league. And they understood that when the fans came out, they had to see the stars play. Now they don't care about the fans because it's all about TV contracts and endorsements. But back then, it was about filling the arena. And there was such an excitement, and kids still feel it. Kev, you have a son. You have two sons, I should say. They both. I mean, I know that Big Kev enjoyed going to games.
Yeah.
And he loves it and got a thrill out of it. I mean, I'm sure Aiden's going to be the same way with that type of stuff. I mean, so I'm not trying to say that there's not a joy in going to an NBA game, but, man, sometimes these players take the steam out of it when they don't suit up in a big spot because they need the day off. And
yeah.
I think that's what hurts.
Couldn't agree more.
That's my NBA point. G?
Okay, Kev, you want to do top five?
Yeah, we're coming down. We've got about, most teams have about 10 to 12 games left.
Mm-hmm.
West, you still got Denver leading. They haven't been playing all that great. Memphis, Sac, still hanging around, but they've still, they're in a 2-3. All those big trades that happened, Kyrie teaming up with Doncic, they were hurt for a little while. They haven't had any chemistry. Durant out. You know, these teams behind them that we thought might make a move to get up to the 2 or 3, haven't. And right now, you still look at 4 through 12 out West, it's still only 3.5 games between 4 and 12. So it's still going to be dogfighting these last 10, 12 games. Eastern Conference, I think you've got a little bit more of a separation. You've got Milwaukee, Boston, Phoenix in the top, Milwaukee, Boston, and Philly, top three. A little gap to the Cleveland, a little gap to the Knicks. Brooklyn and Miami fighting for that 6-7.
Yeah, Miami beat the Knicks tonight.
Oh, did they?
Okay. Unfortunately, yes.
Yep.
I think they won by 7.
Then you got Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago looking like the 8-9-10, and Indy and Washington are 2.5 back. So I think the Eastern Conference, you see a little bit more sanity there as opposed to the West, where you have no idea who's going to be making the playoffs. Anyway, top five, interesting week. You know, you look at what teams have been doing. Nobody's hot, I feel like, in the NBA.
Philly, maybe. That's about it.
Milwaukee, I keep one. They still got the best record, 7-3 in the last 10. Philly, I kept at number 2. They lost their last game, but they were 8-2. Really about the best I've seen over the last 10. 3-4, I was flipping back and forth. Boston, Denver, pick your order. I've got Boston, Denver, 3-4. And 5, I put Cleveland finally making, I think, the first time I've had them in the top 5. And Memphis right there at like 5.5. Who's next?
I got Milwaukee 1, Philly 2, Sacramento 3, Denver 4, and I still got Boston hanging around at 5. I agree with what you said, Kev. And it happened a couple of years ago when I was watching these games. It was before COVID, but I felt like as they got into games 50s and the 60s, the 50th game, 60th game of the season, I feel the same. I feel like it's the same lull. And maybe it's just because around the league, everyone's getting a little tired. But I just feel like everybody gets into this lull right about now. Darren?
I actually have the same exact 5 as Kevin with the same 6 team right off the pace. I have Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Denver, Cleveland. And I have Memphis just off. Memphis has actually won a couple in a row. And yeah, with the whole Ja Morant thing, it was kind of interesting that they did so. I still had the Knicks kind of like hovering with the Kings, like just behind them. But I Milwaukee looks like the best team in the NBA right now. Dallas right now is in the 8-9 game, by the way. I mean, if the season ends today, Dallas is playing 8-9. You know, Phoenix is still in that 4-5 series right now. So they haven't moved up. And they're most likely not going to catch Sacramento, who's in the 3. Or definitely not Memphis in the 2. I mean, I'm talking about Phoenix. Dallas isn't going to certainly catch him. It's pretty impressed with Memphis and Sacramento kind of like hankering down and holding on to the 2-3 seeds. I thought that was really good. The East will be interesting if Miami catches the Nets or not, or if the Nets can kind of hold them off and get the first-round series loss against either Boston or Philly, which has become a race now. It looked like Boston was running away from it. Now they're passing back and forth. I think Boston has right now a half-game lead off Philly's last loss, but I think it's really, really close. So,
yeah.
Interesting stuff there. Jake.
Okay. Let's move to some NHL. Kev, want to talk a little bit about NHL?
Yeah, I think the one thing that this week, Alex Ovechkin, the other night, his 40th goal of the season, came in the 7-6 loss in overtime. Washington's lost 3 in a row. They're not playing well, even though Ovechkin's scoring. But the 40 goal was a big milestone. It's the 13th time in his career he's got 40. Passes Wayne Gretzky for the most. Gretzky had 12 40-goal seasons. Ovechkin just keeps going and going and going.
Guy, he's amazing. Guy doesn't
slow down. He's getting, this is 18th and 19th year in the league and still putting up 40.
Yeah.
Good chance of 50 maybe this year too.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable right now.
Yep. I would say a big week for the Islanders too. So they went out to the West Coast. They went out to California. I think most of us figured pretty good chance they would lose that the Kings, which they did, but they did bounce back with wins against Anaheim and San Jose, which they had to do. Then came home, and last night really, really turned it on against Toronto and beat them 7-2.
How happy were you, Kev? How happy were you to beat Toronto?
Thrilled. And now they've got Columbus and Buffalo the next two before their schedule gets real tough. They have a couple left with Tampa, and a few other really good, Carolina, the Devils, a couple with Washington. So this schedule gets real tough in the last 10. But, yeah, same with the NBA. Hockey's coming down to the last 10. Looking at the playoffs, you know, the Atlantic Division, you've got Boston, clear-cut, best team in the league. You know Toronto and Tampa are going to play a hell of a first-round series. In the Metro, the battles between Carolina and New Jersey for the top spot. Looks like Carolina, they're up 2 points with two games in hand. Looks like he could be setting up for a Devils-Rangers first-round series. The Rangers are going to be the third seed, no matter what. Wild card, the Islanders, Florida, are the two wild cards right now. Pittsburgh's lost four in a row. They still have a couple of games in hand, so they can still catch them. But looks like those three, then you drop back about 5 points to Washington. So I think there's a little bit of separation. So I think it's down to three teams for two spots. Out west, in the Central, you've got Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, clearly going to be the top three in the Central. They're separated by a couple points. It's a matter of which order they're going to finish. In the Pacific, you've got Vegas and L.A. I think it comes down to Edmonton, Seattle, Winnipeg for that third seed in the Pacific. The other two, probably a really good chance at the wild card. Calgary's four back. Nashville's five back. Nashville has about three games in hand on all these teams. But I think that's probably what you're looking at for the playoffs.
Yeah, I like the fact that all the locals are really, really look like they're going to make it. I mean, listen, the Islanders could fall off with a tough schedule, but if they fall off because of the tough schedule, they don't deserve it. They don't have to win every game. They just got to be a 500 team against these teams. That's all. They're a good team, and they have a goalie that can carry them through, and it would be cool to see that. The Rangers and the Devils seem like they're pretty well locked in, and the Islanders getting that separation like they have, and the games in hand aren't as severe as it once was.
Yep.
It really, really makes you feel good about it. The West, really, it's like I think the 18 to set. Calgary and Nashville. Nashville's not playing very well. Calgary has no goaltending, so it makes it a little bit harder to imagine either one of those two teams, you know, coming back and making a run. My opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, Darren. It is. It's nice to see all the local teams getting involved here in the playoffs. Between that and the Knicks, this should be a good come playoff time.
Kev, kick us off with the top five.
All right. Well, we know Boston's won. Not even worth it. 2-3. At Carolina at 2. I think they've moved ahead. Vegas has been hot. They're 8-2 in the last 10. I've got them up to 3. Devils 5-3-2 in the last 10. They've hit a little bit of a lull here. Fallen, like I said, 2 points behind Carolina. I've got them at 4. And the LA Kings 8-0-2 in the last 10. I've got them up to the 5.
I have the same top 4, and my 5 is Toronto. I still got Toronto hanging around.
Darren? I'm a little different than you guys. I have Boston, Carolina, like you guys do. My 3 is still the Devils, actually. I move Colorado's playing really good. They won 6 in a row right now. I move them up to the 4 spot, and I put the Kings at the 5. You know, I have Vegas just off the pace at 6, and I have the Islanders, who's won 3 in a row, right there in the 7 spot.
Okay. Hockey aside for the moment, Darren.
Just a couple of big races coming up this week. We get the Louisiana Derby, which is listen, if you follow horse racing, you don't, whatever, but you're going to make a bet on the Kentucky Derby. I've been talking about Forte a couple times. He's, to me, the favorite going in. The other almost co-favorite or second choice is Instant Coffee. Saez aboard with Cox as the trainer. He'll be running the Louisiana Derby this week. We're going to see if he's really the horse, so to speak. A few competitors would be Sun Thunder, Kings Barnes, Tappet's Conquest. But there's no speed in this race. So while Forte jumps out and stalks pretty well, you know, Instant Coffee does not necessarily, despite his name. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But it should be a really cool race. And then next week we have the Florida Derby. And these are the final push for the prep races to see who gets in. And if you understand the point system that you have to have now, this is a 100-point race for the winner. So you basically qualify for the Derby with this win. Now, the biggest joke to me is that the Jeff Ruby Stakes is also a 100-point freaking race. It's a grade three Jeff Ruby Stakes. It's in Turfway. I know it's part of the Churchill Circuit, but stop. There's not even a real great competitor in this race for it. What, two Phils might be the best horse out there? Yes?
I've never heard of the Jeff Ruby Stakes.
And there you go. This is a prep race worth 100 points. Two Phils and Major Dude are the two best horses in the race. If you looked at it right now, odds on the Kentucky Derby before it runs, and the odds are all over the place at this point because there's still 8,000 horses that are still have a chance to qualify. I'm exaggerating, you know what I mean? Two Phils is like 88-1. He's the best horse in this race if the Derby were to start right now with everybody running. It's not a good field. I don't know why this would be no grade three should ever be a 100-point race. Stop. The racing association's killing itself with stupidity with this. I just had a vent about it. I had to mention it because I didn't hear of the Jeff Ruby Stakes. I thought maybe Kev did. I know G probably didn't, but I know Kev might have. You didn't hear of it either. I'm like, who the hell is Jeff Ruby, and why do we have a stakes for him? You know, I know Jack Ruby. Jeff Ruby, I don't know. So that's the race this week at Turfway. But again, it's a 100-point race. There's a couple of overseas ones, the UAE race. There's the one in Japan for the foreign qualifiers where they get 40 points. And there's like the Sunland Derby on Sunday, which gets 50. But there's no real runners in these races that we know, so I can't touch on it. The one thing I'll say is if you get a chance and you like what you want to see horses you want to bet, either catch the replay, YouTube it, or watch the Louisiana Derby, because Instant Coffee is one of those horses, along with Forte, that should be the favorite in the Derby. And that's what I have there. G?
Okay. Anything else, guys?
I think a little football, just a touch.
Let's touch.
Kev, why don't you kick it off? You're not.
I think we're both thinking the Jets today.
Yeah, pretty much. A lot happened today.
they signed Mecole Hardman to replace Elijah Moore, who they traded along with the third round pick to Cleveland for the second round pick. So now that gives them both the numbers 42 and 43 picks in the second round. I don't like the trade. I thought they could. I didn't think they had to give up a three also to get a two along with more. But I guess it's just more draft picks that they're looking to get just eventually, hopefully, make this trade for Rodgers.
I'm figuring that one of those two picks has to go for Rodgers, that 42 yep. or the 43. And from what I'm reading and hearing, they're going to make the run at Odell, which made Elijah Moore, tradable, so to speak. I don't love it either. I would have thought that we could have gotten like a two and only have to deal a five plus.
Yeah, I was thinking five
plus that, but I think that Cleveland, I think it was a better trade for Cleveland, to be honest. I think Elijah Moore along on the other side of Amari Cooper makes a pretty nice combo if Moore can come back and Deshaun Watson. It's still the funniest thing out there in the NFL right now is that Lamar Jackson, no team is interested. Kevin and I have not been huge fans of like running quarterbacks that are coming off injuries. Apparently, either the NFL is colluding or the NFL feels the same way we do, which never happens, Kevin. So I'd be stunned by that one.
it's not one. It's two straight years that he's missed the last four or five games of the season and not available for the playoffs.
I agree.
You hate to say it, but you can't trust him to stay healthy the way he plays.
It also would be the cost of trying to acquire him, which is, I think, a huge thing. You know, to try to get him, if you're Washington and you want to try to trade, it's going to cost you two ones and then probably another couple of picks. And at the end of the day, you're then going to have to pay him $200 million. Yep. And you got to hope that he makes it through a season. And I think the combination of all those factors is really hindering him going anywhere at the moment. So just my couple of cents, guys.
If he's patient and not looking to sign the any sort of restricted offer sheet right away, you know, his best thing would probably be to wait till after the draft when you push those picks off till next year.
Yeah, the year after. Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing that could happen is they just franchise him and Jackson has to ball out and play a full season. He'll get his money next year. You know, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Just going back a second on the Mecole Hardman. So you know him better as a Chiefs guy.
Yep.
So he can return kicks, which I think is a big key for getting him, because they did release Braxton Berrios, who went to Miami. So they needed a guy back that they could trust returning kicks and punts. And that's what you want, you know, from what's more of a number three type wide receiver.
He's really lightning quick. He's very fast. He was injured down the stretch of the season. He had a pelvic injury. Thing about him is, I don't think his hands are great, but at the same point in time, if it's Rodgers throwing the ball and not Mahomes, and I'm not trying to insult Mahomes, I think Mahomes throws a little bit more of a ball that's no look, or you're not necessarily ready for it as much. I think Hardman's gotten better. I think I don't think he runs every route in the tree, but I think he gives the Jets that real deep threat to go along with Garrett Wilson. I think he's a guy in the slot that no one's going to be able to cover one-on-one if you have him running a crossing pattern across the field. I think that's where he becomes a value on offense, but for the most part, he'll be a return guy. They'll run him on jet sweeps all day long. He's had success with that in Kansas City. He's an okay receiver. He's not great. He's a number three in Kansas City. He'll be a number three here, maybe even a four here. The one thing that stood out to me this week also with that, I mean, they signed Hardman. Brandon Cooks goes to Dallas, which is a big signing for them. Austin Hooper heads to the Raiders to replace Waller in that little tight end thing. And now with Cooks going to Dallas, the OBJ sweepstakes has another team fall out of it, so to speak. Are the Jets able to get OBJ cheap now, or cheaper? I don't know. I don't even want him. At the same point in time, it seems that they're hell bent on getting him. I don't know. I don't know if I want him on this team. I like the idea of Rodgers throwing to Moore and Garrett Wilson. Now that's not going to happen. Now it's going to be Lazard, you know, and Garrett Wilson, and you know, we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't be stunned if the Jets try to do these big splashes from time to time. I just hope that the Rodgers thing comes through when he's finally signed. I'll be really excited, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that stuff.
I think all the reports that are out there are really moving towards the Jets want Beckham because Rodgers wants to throw the ball to him. So we'll see if that actually comes through in the end.
I don't think made a career off one catch. He just made the career off one catch. You guys have anything else we want to wrap up and talk about? G?
No, I'm good.
Kev?
Golf?
Sure.
Match play. Last week in the Valspar, Taylor Moore with his first title in his career. The reason he won, Jordan Spieth was tied with him late in the round. Spieth puts his drive in the water on 16, makes bogey. Bogey's 18, and he finishes two back. This weekend is the match play, the World Golf Championship match play. It might be the last year they do it because it's not on the schedule next year. A couple of years ago, first few years they did it, it was very much like the NCAA bracket. You set up your 64, and they realized that these guys show up, go out, you know, Thursday morning, lose the first round, and they go home. kind of a waste of a weekend. So
they fly in from all over to play one round.
Yeah. So now at least, you know, they've got it broken into 16 four-person pods. So you guarantee to play a round robin, three matches. Top 16 go through, they see them, and then you get your match play. It's one tournament a year that you get your match play, which is fun to watch. So that's what's going on in golf. And all the big names are there.
No, it's always fun to watch the match play. It really is. One thing to know, John Morant was back tonight. I did not realize that. Came off the bench. Memphis had a big win tonight. And Golden State won in Dallas again. So Dallas is continues to flounder and struggle a little bit. Just a couple of NBA notes. So I guess that'll wrap us up. I mean, I think we covered a lot. And we're the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kev, here with Gino. You know, we love the tournament. This is our favorite time of year. We really get into it. So hopefully you enjoy it too and you understand the excitement of it. It actually dies down a little bit to an extent after the first weekend because now there's just games there. You know, there's less games. So you're not going from one buzzer beater to another and all the other excitement. But hope you guys enjoyed the show this week and last week. You know, download our podcast anywhere you can download your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify. Catch us anywhere that you'd like. Follow us on social media. Send us questions. Make comments. Tell us you hate us. Whatever it may be, just let us know what's going on and share our stuff. Share our show. We want more people to listen. We want to, you know, we want to talk to you guys more. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.